Hello, good morning, and welcome to the Albion Roar Does Breakfast here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course, on our podcast. I'm AD Packham, and we are scrambling your eggs with the brilliant assistance of OldFootballShirts.com. So, today, after a break of 34 years, we finally make our return to the top table. It's taken 19 different managers, 4 different home grounds, 3 club crests, and a run to near extinction. The events of the last 20 years have not been forgotten, and it has put us in a better position to appreciate where we are today. So, today, we face Manchester City, who have spent big this summer. In fact, their new defence has cost more than the Amex and the training ground put together. We've also got the chequebook out, smashing our transfer record to bring in Dutch international midfielder Davy Plupper from PSV, and then doing it again to bring in Colombian international Jose Izquierdo, pray for Aspinall, from Club Bruges. All the bookies and pundits have got us a dead cert to go back down. Can we prove them wrong? Joining me and Alan Wares today is, well, everyone, it seems. But to start with, we welcome the professor in the shape of Mr. Kieran Maguire.
Morning, AD.
We also welcome his love interest in Dave Ryder.
Good morning.
And we welcome the man who's got, he hasn't got a book to plug or anything, but or a theatre show or anything like that. It's Bob Booker.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
I'm very well. How are we all?
Yeah, we're very good. Yeah, hungry.
Excellent. Well, that leads me nicely on to the very first question, and it's probably going to be the most important question I ask today. What makes the best breakfast? You're allowed one item each.
Bacon.
Fried egg.
A well done sausage.
are we going with the black pudding gambit on this one? Because and a hash brown maybe some beans.
Yeah, possibly some baked beans and a.
How do you like your eggs, Kieran?
I don't eat eggs.
Well, that answers that question nicely. But here we go. I mean, it's been a long, long wait for this for us to get here. So, I mean, how are you all feeling about today? Has it sunk in yet? I mean, for many people, they're saying that it's not going to sink in until they actually see us on Match of the Day, which we're going to be on tonight. But, Bob, for you, how are you feeling?
Well, I'm working down at the Albion today, so I'm particularly looking forward to that. It's going to be a massive day. I think it will sink in just as the teams are coming down that tunnel, and we actually see Manchester City lined up against us down that tunnel. I think that's going to be quite exciting for a lot of people, and I think the atmosphere will be well pumped up for this game today. So, yeah, really looking forward to it.
Now, Kieran, you of course, live and work in the North West. So how's the feeling up there? Are they think it's going to be a rollover for them, or are they nervous?
Oh, they're very confident, all my City supporting mates. They feel that they've invested very well over the summer, and that Pep's really got the squad exactly how he likes them. If you look at what they've been doing pre-season, it's scary.
Okay, well, later on today, we will be talking to a chap called David Mooney, who is the presenter of the Blue Moon podcast. So we'll be getting their viewpoint. But, Dave, I mean, your enthusiasm for the last season, it was so infectious. So it was. Are you still on the crest of a wave?
Well, I mean, how could I not be? I'm just absolutely buzzing for it. It just feels a bit surreal. You say, has it sunk in yet? It doesn't feel like it has, to be honest.
Is there going to be one moment that you think, oh my God?
I think, as Bob says, when they come out of the tunnel and everyone's going nuts in the stands, and we're actually seeing, you know, Pep Guardiola in the technical area, and it's all kicking off from there. It's just going to be surreal. It's like, you know, it's like having a massive cup tie every week now for the whole season, and you know, we just got to enjoy it.
Okay, well, you mentioned cup finals and things like that there. We are going to be having flags on the seats when we get into the stadium today. Where do you stand on that?
Doesn't always work out that well for us, does it? I don't mind. It's going to look great for the cameras. They'll be able to use it all season. We'll probably get it shown every week on Match of the Day.
But I mean, Kieran, I mean, there's a train of thought that says we should be just treating it as just another game. I mean, have we not learned any lessons from, for instance, the Bristol City game last year, where there was all the pomp and ceremony, and it was like if Bristol City just needed a shot in the arm, a pre-match talk, it was just like, look at this, they think they've already done it.
Well, we had actually done it against Bristol City, to be fair. We'd just been promoted. You take yourselves back to Doncaster at the first match at the Amex. That was an amazing occasion. And I think that the use of the flags just helped make it look even more special than it was. So I'm in favour.
Bob, where do you stand from a player's point of view when you walk out and see those flags waving?
Well, past history isn't good for us, is it? You know, with Gus, we had the clappers and things like that. We've had the flags. As a player, you know, it can distract you, I think. If you're coming out there, really you should be focused and just getting on with the job in hand. Mm. But it's such a spectacle when you see it as a player come out there. I think it's quite easy to get wrapped up in it. So really, you've got to keep your focus today. And, you know, it's going to be a special day. Flags, whatever, it will be a fantastic spectacle. I think it's going to be a busy time as the Manchester City coach turns up as well. There's normally like a few people waiting for the opposition to turn up. That's going to be slightly busy today. So I think there'll be a few stewards, you know, getting that coaching close to the dressing room door as the players come off it. So it's really going to be built up from well early this afternoon.
Well, I'm led to believe it's actually the opera singer who's the bad omen, and she's been binned off, so there.
I like her. You can't beat a bit of opera.
you mean Oprah?
And that.
Probably. Now, Kieran, we've just paid £15 million for a player. Brighton and Hove Albion have just paid £15 million for a player. How has this happened?
Well, we've actually spent more money in the last 6 weeks than in the 20 years prior to that, since we've left the Goldstone. The reason we're doing it is that Sky have effectively written out a cheque for £100 million this year. So therefore, it's up to Chris and the team to choose how to spend it. And if you want to get that £100 million every year, then you've got to invest in the squad.
Mm. But, I mean, have we invested wisely?
Well, time will tell on that, won't it? I mean, I don't think we've rushed into anything, which is good, because you can't do that. It's easy to have the money and just go bang, 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 and you're making signings for the sake of the supporters. But it's got to be right, and Chris has sort of done his job quietly in the backroom staff. And the people behind the scenes getting players in. So time will tell. It's all about putting a team of players together that can do the job. And Chris done that particularly well last year, in a shape. There was no big time Charlies. They all had a job to do. It was week in and week out. The odd little slip up. And hopefully now we're in the big league, he will want to sort of maintain that pattern that we had last year by adding a few players now and again. I think he's done it his own time when it's right.
15 million, though. I mean, it's a world away from Lee Steele, isn't it?
It's a million miles away from our training ground at the university, where we were cramped in a little office, me and all the staff, particularly with Malcolm Stewart, who's here today, you know, trying to get him in because he's a rather large guy. It's changed considerably. You walk around the Amex now, and we're very, very blessed, and the players should feel very privileged, and I hope they do when they run out today in the Premier League.
Well, last time you were on the show here, it was pre-Amex, so a lot's changed in that time, hasn't it?
Yeah, I got the sack, that's what's changed. No, it was my dream to get to the Amex, and I didn't quite get there with numerous managers, and I'll never forget the day when we went over there and they was marking the pitch out, and Mickey Adams was there at the time, and they marked the pitch out, and Dick Knight took a penalty.
And I was there that day.
Yeah, we were there with players. And Mickey just tapped me on the shoulder. He said, "Listen, son, I don't think we'll be seeing this." And he was right. But no, it would have been lovely to get there. But I'm lucky enough still to work down at the Amex now on a social basis and work in the lounges and do media work. So I'm very, very happy, and I'm just pleased I'm part of it.
On a personal level, I mean, how do you actually feel about it? Because obviously you've been affiliated with other clubs, particularly Brentford and Sheffield United. I mean, it's well documented that you've got a box named after you at Sheffield United, and you've just got this book coming out which documents your career, which we'll talk about a little bit later on. And of course, we might be doing that at the Camellia on the 6th of September for an evening with Bob Booker and Mark McGee. Just get that one in there. Tickets available now.
I'm glad you got that in.
Yeah, I'll be getting it in a lot, I think. Got a lot of tickets to sell. But yeah, I mean, from a personal point of view, I mean, you live here and you still work for the club. But I mean, do you have that same level of attachment that myself, Kieran and Dave do?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I'm a supporter of the club, and I always will be since I joined them in 2000. It's slightly different now because I can go home and shut the door and have a bit of a social life and sort of worry about the result, because if the team's winning, everybody's happy down there. But I don't have the pressure of when we're travelling, when we're training, looking after a squad of players, which I miss particularly on a day-to-day basis. But a lot of the other stuff, it's nice to sort of drop your shoulders and have a life outside of football now. So it is quite bizarre being out of it, but I'm still involved a little bit, but not to that extent.
Okay, so, I mean, looking forward to this season then, a lot's been said about how we're going to play, but how do you see it tactically?
I don't think it'd be a lot different to what we've been playing in the Championship.
So you think it will be a 4-4-2?
Yeah, I think, yeah, mostly, yeah. I don't see why not. He might just play a little one deeper off of Glenn or whoever's playing up front. But I think we'll still have that passing game. It will be slick. We're going to have to be a lot more patient because the teams against us are going to be really patient against us and a slow build-up. So we can't go chasing things and getting out of shape, which I don't think we did last year. So from that point of view, I think, you know, there'll be, I say, with the additions, I think we'll still be playing some exciting football.
Okay, Kieran, I mean, a lot of people have and the pundits are saying that we're going to go 4-5-1 this season and play just one up top. Which I guess we'll go into a 4-3-3, but I mean, Chris has been had the criticism levelled at him in the past, particularly at Norwich City when he was in this league before, that he was too defensively minded.
I don't agree necessarily. I mean, if you look at the football that we played last season, we're always on the front foot. And if you look at the nature of the players, you know, Anthony Knockhart, Solly March, they're very exciting players. And you've got somebody in Glenn who I think people have been really disrespectful to over the summer. He's an experienced striker. He knows where the back of the net is, and we've got good supply lines. I think some of the new signings that have come in are going to help that as well.
Okay, I mean, I don't think anyone's really been disrespectful to him. They just haven't really been talking about him.
This is a lad that's played in the Premiership already.
Yeah.
And as Kieran said, you know, you don't have a centre forward that scores 20-odd goals last year if he doesn't get service. So we've been getting service to that Glenn Murray, either from Knockhart or Murphy, whoever. So we've had wide players. He's not going to run around and come short and get the ball. And he works hard, but he works between the 18-yard lines. And if you get the ball in there, he's going to put it in the net.
So do you think he's actually going to be a starter?
Why not?
Or is he going to be...
He's your top scorer, so he's got. For me, he's got to start.
I reckon he might be a substitute.
song, Andy, like that.
That was, of course, the Who and Substitute, and as you just heard, Bob Booker likes that.
Rather.
But in fact, you're actually wearing a Who watch.
Yeah, been a big fan since 1974, seen them 59 times. I know what you're thinking, sad man.
I see what you did there. It's me and Kieran that normally play song bingo on this show, but we didn't actually agree on a subject. You were going to go with Linkin Park today, weren't you? But it was, that would just be the end for me. Moving on. Now, Kieran, the transfer window so far, we have spent quite a lot more money. In fact, a lot more than, say, for instance, a small club like Crystal Palace.
That's right. That's because we've invested fairly broadly over the squad. Palace have made one or two loan signings. And you've got to be honest, as much as we loathe Palace, they look pretty solid with Sahar and Benteke. And Kabaye, you know, they've bought well over the last few years. So they don't need to invest, I think, to the same extent as the Albion. I don't think the chequebook has finished being used at the Amex, though.
I mean, did we need wholesale changes? I look at that squad from last year. Now, obviously, yes, we do need a little bit more quality, a little bit more nous and Premier League experience, is what we're being told. But, I mean, a majority of that squad, I mean, we went close the year before. We got over the line this year. It just needs tweaking, doesn't it? Surely the massive...
I think that's really important because I think we've seen what happens sometimes when you get a team that gets promoted and they pretty much throw it all up in the air and get a load of new signings in that then have to gel together, and you lose the team spirit that got you there in the first place. So I'm pleased that we've still got a spine of the team there that, minus Stockdale, unfortunately, which I'll never understand that decision, but we've still got the spine of the team that got us there, and I hope that they play a major role this year, and I think they will.
Bob, David Stockdale?
Strange one, really. You know, it's all like kissing the badge at the end of the season, things like that, and all of a sudden you drop the shoulder and you're out of here. Money talks, location talks for a footballer. You can't blame him in the long run because it's his career. He's, you know, he's looking to the future for his family. So mixed feelings, really. I would have loved to have seen him stay, and he'd done a great job for us. I was a little bit disappointed in the timing and the way it happened, but I sort of half understand it, having been in sort of that position when I got transferred to Sheffield United for a set of tracksuits slightly different, but there you go.
You're not Gary Hart.
Close to it.
But, I mean, it was a very, very strange one. And we brought in the Australian who had a mixed game against Atletico last week.
Yeah, I think, obviously the mistake stands out, but other than that, I thought there was quite a few encouraging signs for the team in the way he distributes it. And that was something big that we had with Stockdale, was how good he was at finding people on the wing, both through throwing it and kicking it. And I think that Ryan showed signs of that as well, which is, I think, what Chris looks for in a keeper. It's a big part of a goalkeeper for Chris Hughton. So, yeah, I think we've got a good guy between the sticks who can carry on with that.
It's like having another player these days, isn't it, your goalkeeper? You know, David Stockdale with his feet was like as good as a centre-half. Mm. And Dave said, it's always difficult with a goalkeeper because if he makes a mistake, it can cost you a goal. If you're centre forward, you get another three or four chances. If you're a defender, you can get back up on your feet and make another tackle. So you're in the spotlight, and he will be in the spotlight having someone like David to follow. But I'm sure he'll do fine. You know, the team's done their work.
Yeah.
And we spent £5 million on a goalkeeper. You know, that's that's big business for us. So, looking forward to seeing him today.
As rickets go, though, I mean, that was pretty... that was primary school, really.
But pretty much nerves.
Get it out of the way in a game like that. It's done with now.
But, Kieran, I mean, obviously we have spent a lot of money, and, I mean, can this increased level of spending continue, or will the bubble burst?
No, there's plenty of scope for more. If you look at the people who are in the market at present, we've got Sky and BT domestically, but there's talk of the likes of Apple, Amazon, Google, Facebook, Netflix, all being interested in these broadcasting rights. So the next round, which is they're currently starting to negotiate for, expect that to go up by another 35-40%.
But when you look at, I mean, have PSG broken football? I mean, I can't even comprehend playing that amount of money for a footballer when that's someone's national budget.
They spent less money this summer than Manchester City, so I don't know why people are so up in arms about PSG. I'm far more scared of City myself.
Really? How so?
Because they've got £450 million worth of players against the Albion today. Yeah, and that's a purely pure self-interest point of view. If you look at football today, because it is being bought by the oligarchs and the sovereign wealth funds, it's a completely different game. It's politics and vanity involved in the game as much as being a sport.
I mean, is there going to be a knock-on effect for us then? Obviously, I mean, with the increased transfer fees, I mean, $222 million for Neymar, $15 million player for a player from Bruges, which most of us, let's be honest, had never heard of. I don't understand it, to be honest, but I do hark back to the days when clubs used to search the lower leagues for a player like Bob Booker.
And exactly, they're out there.
But I mean, the talent is in the lower league. So I mean, is that going to will it come to the top again? I can't see it happening.
I mean, with a lot of our players today that haven't played at that level, and I hadn't played at that level, which was the old First Division until I got to Sheffield United. And our first season, we just had a team of thugs. There was me, there was Vinnie Jones, there was Mark Morris, there was Brian Dean, Tony Garner, no real names. And we just went in there and surprised quite a few teams. We didn't win a game until Christmas, but we managed to stay up and I scored the winning goal. Just thought I'd get that in. But you can do it. And these players haven't got to be frightened today. You know, the Knockarts, well, he's tapped his toe in it a little bit, but a lot of the squad have never ventured into this territory. So there's nothing to be frightened of. They've just got to go out and express themselves. And we might just get out there and surprise a few. It's going to be tough. We're going to take a few batterings, you know, on the way. And fans have just got to be patient because it's not going to be an overnight fix. You know, if we come fourth from bottom, I'll be over the moon for the Albion. You know, so it's going to be a difficult season and everybody's got to be patient. Look what they've done with Sean Dyche and stuck with it after you go down. You know, if you go down, it's going to be tough, but we're hoping we're just going to stick in there and battle it through. And if we look at the likes of Bournemouth and Crystal Palace and Watford, we've got every chance of doing that.
Well, I mean, the bookies have got us as favourites to go down. I mean, do you agree with them or are they just looking at a newly promoted side and not really looking at the facts?
I think it's exactly that. You read anything from any of the pundits and they look at, it's almost like a knee jerk. You look at who's been promoted and you assume that they're the ones that are going to go. I mean, why we're behind Huddersfield in a lot of pundits' thoughts, I don't know, because they finished way behind us in the league, finished fifth. Lots of lone players that they've had to replace. So no, I don't. I think the Premier League, you've got three different leagues in it now, haven't you? You've got the top six, you've got the mid table, and then you've got the.
You mean Everton?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, you know, we've got a lot of huge games coming up against these behemoths at the top of the league, and anything you get from that is going to be a bonus, I think. But then you look at the teams around us that are going to be down there with us. I think you know your Bournemouths, your Swanseas, your Crystal Palaces.
I don't see Bournemouth being there. I mean, they've spent really well this summer.
I don't know. I think they might find it more difficult this season. But we'll, you know, time will tell. But I think in a way, some of the less glamorous games, if there is such a thing in the Premier League, but they're going to be the more important ones because the six pointers are the ones that are going to be around the teams that, you know, that are down there with us, around us. Anything we get from the top teams is a bonus, I think, but the really big games are the ones against Watford and Swansea, where, you know, we need to not only, you know, get the points, but deny them the points as well.
Kieran, where do you see our chances?
We're in that division in the bottom six, and if we come in the top three of that bottom six, as Bob said, we're all going to be very happy.
Do we get a trophy?
Yeah, it's called a £100 million cheque.
Well, that would be absolutely marvellous. Well, OK, well, let's have some more music. Now, this is a song by a man who, unfortunately, has passed away this week. And he was a bit of a virtuoso on the guitar, and some of the effects and stuff that he actually managed to get out of that thing without actually having the modern effects is absolutely fantastic.
FM. Radio Reverb.
I am a lineman for the county, and I drive the main road, searching in the sun for another overload. I hear you singing in the wire, I can hear you through the whine, and the Wichita lineman is still on the line. I know I need a small vacation, but it don't look like rain. And if it snows, that stretch down south won't ever stand the strain. And I need you more than want you, and I want you for all time. And the Wichita lineman is still on the line. And I need you more than want you, and I want you for all time. And the Wichita lineman is still on the line.
You are listening to the Albion Roar Breakfast Show here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. We are live today from the open market. I'm sat here with Kieran Maguire, Dave Ryder and Bob Booker. And outside I can see the swelt figure of Malcolm Stewart, who'll be in a second. And Joe Hunter from Piglet's Pantry will be in very shortly as well. And she's brought food, more importantly. But has she brought the coffee? Because the coffee shop in the market isn't actually open yet. Now, Bob, you've got a book coming out. We mentioned we're doing a show at the Comedia on the 6th of September. Tickets are available now from the Comedia ticket office. Thank you very much. Tell us about the book and how it all came about.
Well, it came about, I was on holiday in New York with my good lady wife, Nikki, sitting on our lovely sun terrace one afternoon, and I got a call from Greville Waterman, who's a lifelong Brentford fan, and obviously I knew him through my Brentford days. He was the one that used to sit behind my dad and shout, "Get off, Booker, you crap." but he's obviously followed my career.
And we all did, mate, to be honest.
We all did, yeah. And he just touched on that he's written a few books about season by season, but his publisher asked him if he could do something a little bit different, and a spotlight on somebody. So
why you?
Exactly. Why me? Because I probably just came from a normal background. I worked in a furniture factory. I made it as a professional footballer. I've been at three different clubs as player, coach and assistant manager. So I suppose it could be quite a nice little story. And it is a journey about my life as a footballer and my life. You know, it's not about what flash cars I bought or how much I earn or how much any clubs I've been to. It's about what it was like to be a footballer in the 80s when you really got to earn your living.
Now, we've spoken to you about this before when you were on the show, and we'll be obviously be talking about it at length during the theatre show. But do you think the footballers these days are going to have those stories that you had? Because it was a lot harder back then, and obviously there wasn't the money that there is now.
Probably not. I mean, the bigger so-called name players, they all tend to bring a book out, but it's the ones that have just in the background, you know, what stories will they have? I don't know. I'll probably find it very difficult for them to find some stories of times that players added that era, and there's been a lot of us. And it's just nice to put it out there in the book, and so people can see what it is like behind the scenes a little bit on a day-to-day basis in that sort of era. So hopefully people will get on Amazon and get it. It's $12.99. You can get it on your Kindle as well. Another little plug there. But no, just... You know, it's not about how many books I sell. It's just something I'm very proud of. And the fact that Greville Waterman approached me, I'm very, very honoured about. And it's just something that we've worked hard in the last year and a half. Well, he's done unbelievable. So just glad to have it in book form. And my dad would have been very proud of it, so I've dedicated it to my dad.
Well, the book, of course, will be on sale at the Commedia on the 6th of September. Tickets available now from the Commedia box office. And you'll be signing copies of it there as well.
I certainly will, yeah, with one of my old managers, Mark McGee. So we're going to double up for one night only. In fact, I've got one of my other managers tonight, Mickey Adams, who's coming down to the game today. So he's having one night only in my house tonight. So that could get messy.
Which was the best to work with?
All different characters. I mean, you know, in the book, they all had their part to play. I had to treat them all differently. They all had different requirements. You know, Peter Taylor sort of done a lot of stuff on his own. Stevie Copper will let me get on with a lot of the coaching. They've all got different traits, and it was just a pleasure to work with them. I feel very honoured that I've worked under, you know, such good, real what I call real good managers, football managers.
I mean, was there one that you'd learn more about the game from? For instance, Steve Coppell was a well-known student of the game.
Yeah. Well, Steve did a lot of video work, which he put into the players, you know, when he came in, and he got into the players' heads and they bought into it. And if a player doesn't buy into what you're trying to show him or on the pitch or on video, then you've got no chance. But the players bought into it, and unfortunately, we just missed out with Steve, but the lads had a right good go for him. So he's, yeah, a very astute manager, and it was a pleasure to work for him.
Kieran, I mean, you were around watching us, as were you, Dave. I mean, those days were it was a long time ago, but they certainly can't be forgotten, can they?
No, and in those days it was us against the world, because we were playing at the Wythe Dean, and the odds were stacked against us. So you felt that the team were a complete unit together, and there was this all for one and one for all mentality. And those were really exciting times, and following the Albion all over the country those days, as I was fortunate enough to do so, was an absolute blast, and I'm really grateful for Bob and all the other guys for the enjoyment that they gave to us.
Yeah, I think it was, as you say, us against the world very much, and we had a lot of success there. I mean, we had, 12 seasons, we had 4 promotions.
It was the most successful time of our history.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it became a fortress for us, you know, and even at the level when we stepped up, we held our own, and we were unfortunate to go down, I think, when we were relegated.
Okay, well, one man who was, he didn't actually manage at Wythe Dean, but he certainly would have liked to have managed Brighton in Brighton, and that was Brian Horton, and Alan caught up with him earlier this week.
It was hard to take, you know, nothing was sinking in really. And you're talking about stitches, because I had to come off the field in the Blackpool game, because Billy Ronson, he's gone over the ball, and I had to come off and have stitches in my ankle and go back on. So then we got the penalty, and we did what we had to do, didn't we? And then we'd heard a roar that Southampton scored, and we all think we're going up, and then we come off, and obviously they haven't, they've drawn 0-0. And then obviously the gaffer says what he says in that respect, that we can do it next year, but you're not even thinking about that, are you? You're thinking how close we've come, will we ever get that close again? It was a very, very difficult day.
So when the season started again, I mean, how easy was it to put the end of the previous season behind you?
You have to. I mean, we've got a good squad. We had a tremendous bunch of players. I've said this many times, how well we mixed, both on and off the pitch. You know, we played golf together, went out for dinner together, and it was a great team spirit. So that was there, that was in place. I can't really remember now how many players came in that refreshed a little bit. I'm sure there was a couple, but we still had belief in ourselves, and obviously we knew it was going to be a tough season again, because it's like the Championship now. Everybody wants to get, you know, up to the top division, so we knew it was going to be tough.
So as the 78-79 season was progressing, I mean, I assume that there must have been a very strong air of confidence about the entire team. I mean, we were, you know, always in the top 3 or 4 all the time, sometimes top of the table. Did you feel that as the season was going on, you think, yeah, this is us, we're going to do this?
Yeah, deep down, but you never know, do you? I mean, you know, we had some good players. Wardy was an outstanding player, goal scorer. Sully was an outstanding footballer. I don't always think got the credit he deserved, you know. Teddy Maybank was an unsung hero, the fact that, because he came for a lot of money and didn't get goals galore, but he was a great team player. You know, Steve Foster, Mark Ronson, Jerry Ryan weighed in with goals. It was a very, very good all-round team.
Well, there was yourself as well. I mean, no slouch as a captain.
Yeah, I mean, I've been captain all my career. So I was captain at the school, I was captain at Port Vale, and Peter Taylor, the day I came to Brighton in 76, made me team captain, which I love doing. You know, it was not just on the field that you captain, you're captain off the field, you know, you have lots of things to do, organise things, organise players, where they're going to go on, you know, to have the meetings with the fans and stuff like that, and doing all the £1,000 a week draw that we were doing at that time. Lots of things go with being a captain, but I always enjoyed that part of it.
I mean, you talked about that pool of talent that we had there. You know, we mentioned, like, say, Lawrenson and Maybank and Ward and Poskett and O'Sullivan and everyone. How easy was it to be the captain to a team that was actually doing that well?
The manager, Alan, was obviously captain all through his life, wasn't he? Captain England, captain Tottenham, and captain everywhere he'd been. And he gave me lots of freedom in that respect, you know, to say if I made a change on as the game was going, you know, because that happens a lot where people change tactics. And it's not like today where you've got the DVDs and you've got all the stuff on the opposition. It wasn't like that in those days. You get a team report, and that was roughly it. So he always said to me, if you need to make a change on the pitch, I'll back you 100%. But it goes right or wrong, I'll back you 100%. And so he gave me that license, you know, to carry those things out on the pitch, which is great for me because I felt I could do that. I never found it hard to be able to talk and cajole and praise and give people a rollicking if they needed it. So, and I took it. I wasn't there that thinking that, you know, I was untouchable. You know, people used to have a go at me as well if I'd done something wrong. That's how a team should be.
So when it got to the end of the season, I mean, what did it mean to you? I mean, for us, obviously, it was absolutely everything, especially when you get to the last game of the season at Newcastle. But it's Brian Houghton, he's got the role of captain of Brighton and Hove Albion when, for the first time in our then 79-year history, we've got promoted. What did that mean to you at the time?
It meant an awful lot because I'd come in from non-league. You know, I'd had a free transfer when I was 17 from Walsall and then played non-league for 4 years and then got my chance to go back into the Football League. And I'll always be grateful for Gordon Lee for taking me into Port Vale when I was 21, took a risk, took a gamble. And when I got back in the league, I made it, you know, almost a vow to myself that I wasn't going back to work. I've been working on a building, which I loved it, to be fair. So I was working for myself on the building, trade, playing part-time football, and absolutely loved it. But the chance to go back into full-time league football, obviously, you know, I wouldn't turn down. So,
well, it's boys' own stuff, isn't it?
It is a little bit, because it was always in the back of my mind that I want to play in the top level. I want to play against the top players, you know, the likes of Brian Robson, Liam Brady, you know, Glenn Hoddle and people like that, and the people who played against at Southampton, the Keegans. That's what my goal was. That's what really drove me on as an individual.
So when, obviously the parallels are being drawn between, you know, the team that went up in 79 and the team that's gone up this year, but when it got to the first game of the season in the top division, you know, a nice easy game at home to Arsenal. I mean, how does, again, as a player and as a captain, do you actually get to prepare for that?
Well, we'd gone abroad and done all the pre-season work, but nothing prepares you for the first game, because you play half a game, you come off, you play 60 minutes, you come off. It's, you know, you're getting fit in various ways. I mean, we used to go over the downs and do a lot of running over by your water all up.
I bet that was popular, wasn't it?
It's things that they don't do now, you know, which is right. I mean, there's modern things, very rarely do that kind of thing, but we did it and got on with it. And what I'm saying is that nothing, you know, prepares you for first game, and then when it comes at Arsenal, you think, wow, you couldn't have a better game at home. There's going to be 30,000 at the Goldstone. And when there's 30,000 on the Goldstone, it was rocking. It was fantastic. The atmosphere was brilliant. It was a nice sunny day, and it's Arsenal coming to town, so
it's a bit of a culture shock, was it?
The result was a culture shock, wasn't it? Because all of a sudden, after that, you know, it's a razzmatazz before the game, everything that's going on, and the build up, and all of a sudden, you get whacked 4-0 at home, and you know, a bit of a realism kicks in. I think that probably did us good, to be perfectly truthful. The fact that, you know, all of a sudden, you think, wow, we have got to step up to the mark here, else we're going to go straight back down. And I think that's what he did for us.
So let's go fast forward to today. Obviously, everything's different. Yes, we've got promotion to the top division, but, you know, everything is kind of different in comparative terms. What would the Brian Houghton of 1979, what advice would you give to Bruno of 2017?
To try and keep the belief, no matter what happens, you know, in the first few games, I mean, it is a tough game, and obviously a game that, you know, I'll be looking at because I manage both clubs. I was lucky enough to go and manage Man City, and I was lucky enough to manage Brighton, which was a shame that it was at Gillingham and not in Brighton. So my advice would be, you know, no matter what the result, that get a good result, and it goes on from there. But if it doesn't, you've got to keep the belief, and he's a good pro, he's a good captain. I've never met the guy, but I've heard very, very good stories about him. So that will be his job, to keep things calm. I mean, the setup now there is fantastic, isn't it? You know, the Bloom family have done wonderful for the football club, as they did with Mr. Bloom, who was my vice chairman. The stadium is fantastic. The training ground now, Phil Brown and I went down. Our youngsters played there a couple of months back and went down to have a look at it, and met Chrissy for the day, and he looked after us, showed us around, and. You know, it's just a fantastic setup, and the fans are fantastic. They are unbelievable. You know, all through the time I was there, nothing but good, really. You know, obviously we didn't have a relegation, did we, or anything, so no need for them to be like that. You know, it was on the up, third division, second division, just missed out up there, stayed up there. So that's the advice I'd be giving to the whole crowd, to the whole team, would just be, just keep belief if things haven't gone right over the first few weeks.
That, of course, was the voice of Brian Horton, who Alan Ware's caught up with last week. And in case you're wondering where Al is, he is here.
I am here. He is here.
And so is Malcolm Stewart. Welcome, Malcolm. How are you?
Nice to see you. Very nice indeed.
Nice, always a pleasure to have you in here. And Bob was very excited to see you as well.
I bet he was.
He was like a big lovable pup, wasn't he?
I know.
He's had a bad back of late. That's why he's pleased to see you.
His bad knee, apparently, actually. But did you ever used to be a captain of a school team?
No, I'm glad Nobby got that in. Captain of a Sunday side, I tell you what though, you'd love to have Nobby in your side. Competitive, you know, to such a degree. I actually saw him after a game which we'd won 2-1, and he was skipper. Actually get a player physically and throw him against the wall, because the player had pulled out of a tackle. And I'll tell you what, he put the fear of Christ in him, and the fan never pulled out of another tackle. He knew Nobby was waiting for him, but...
Well, he was talking about this in the interview just now, shades of Alan Mullery. He was effectively Alan Mullery on the pitch, you know, plus, you know, sort of 5 years later. I mean, Mullery himself was no shrinking violet on the pitch and did very well. He was effectively his own man on the pitch. I mean, is that what you saw when you were, you know, seeing them operate together?
Oh, yes. Mullers was running the club and Nobby basically was running the team. He had the players out. It was him that got the social life going with the players. He controlled the dressing room. And it's funny nowadays that you listen to people, Gary Cahill talking this week, saying that big step for him to control the dressing room as John Terry did. These people sometimes are very rare. We were very lucky in our time that we had the likes of Danny Cullett, Charlie Oakway. Dressing room's controlled, makes it so much easier for the manager and staff.
Do you remember, Mal, when we came in, we was coming off the pitch one day, me and Mickey, and he said, "Do you want to be good cop or bad cop?" And we come in, Danny Cullett had Bobby Zamora by the throat, telling him if he didn't start running around, you're costing him his bonus, sort it out. And that was your team talk done. You go and win the game 1-0 and Bobby Z scores.
Yeah.
Like Malcolm said, they used to do your team talk for you, that lot.
Oh, and what you do, just sort of like sit there and have a cup of tea and
let him get on with it.
Sort of giggling, let him get on with it, you know. And
We played at Blackpool on Tuesday night, lovely place to be. And we 1-0 up at half time, and we played superbly. And going in, Mickey went, "I hate this, I hate it, I don't know what to say, they've been so good." He said, "I've got to do something." So he went in, and the players know they've played well, they're sitting down, they're full of it. So Mick just went in and went, "Well done, fellas, pleased with you. But you know what we're like, we need another goal to make sure we win it." To which Danny Cullett replied, "What are you saying?" He said, "Well, nothing, Danny." He said, "What are you saying, we can't defend?" We didn't concede a goal for 8 games for him. Just had to know the buttons to press, and if you question Danny's defending, you press the button.
I was about to say, was Mickey the kind of fellow that could actually take on the likes of Danny and Chippy and Charlie, or you know, did he have to sort of back away sometimes?
Oh, no.
I normally suffered for it. I was the backlash, wasn't I? You know, if they wanted to take it out.
Or D-bag you.
It was me, D-bag, thrown in the pond, name it, it happened. But, no, I mean, Mickey could rule by fear a little bit. You know, I think it was little man syndrome, to be honest. And he won't mind me saying that. His nickname is Little Legs.
Did he ever get... I mean, irrespective of sort of, you know, being the gaffer, did he sort of, like, ever have to sort of win and not belittle those sort of players that we're talking about,
yes,
but as in pull them into shape and say, "Look, you're right, you guys do what you do, but I'm not happy with you.
Absolutely. He didn't mind pointing the finger. I had the same with Dave Bassett. You know, many a time I've been sitting in that dressing room and absolutely belittled me, called me a donkey, what you're doing, you know, you're not getting your tackles in, you're not winning headers. So, yeah, you either respond to that, which that little crew did, like, you know, they got together and said, we'll show that little git, we're going to get out there and we're going to produce. So it was, yeah, it was a bit of a mind game battle, as Mel said, but he had control of the dressing room, that's for sure.
It was very much a horses for courses thing, though, isn't it, with the man management stuff? Because, I mean, like you said, some players will respond to that, and I'm guessing someone like Paul Brooker probably didn't.
Well, Paul Brooker probably just got beaten up on a daily basis.
Paul was scared. If he looked in the mirror, he jumped.
I've got to tell this story because I did find it quite funny. I posted an ad for this today's show on North Stand Chat, and someone thought that I said that we've got Bob Booker coming. He's like, "Oh, he was a fantastic winger. I loved him, but he didn't like the sun. He didn't like playing in the cold weather, did he?"
That's Bob.
They've got you confused with Paul.
Listen, short sleeves, me mate. Yeah, all through the season, short sleeves.
No shin pads.
Exactly. Yeah.
No Under Armour. No.
Played in
cycling
spikes.
Shorts.
Tell you what, playing Sheffield in short sleeves, you're tough.
Yeah. Well, it's. What was I going to ask you? I mentioned at the top of the show, you weren't here then, but since we last played in the top division, we've had 19 different managers. I reckon you probably worked with most of them.
Yeah.
There's a reason why we've had 19 managers, because they work with Malcolm.
I have got a list of them here, and
not all of them, please.
I have got a list of all of them, but
that's why he's 20 stone.
But you were obviously around in 83. You actually started in 79, didn't you?
Yeah,
in the U team. So you were around. So how does this promotion compare to that promotion for you?
I think this is probably harder now to achieve. Don't get me wrong, there's several similarities. We went very close before and then went up the following season, just like this team have done. And I'll tell you what, that's not a bad thing, because the football that Brighton are playing now, very similar to most teams in the top league, and they've shown they're mentally strong to be able to do what they did last season. But the money that's awash now in football, in the time before when we went up, Brighton were considered to be a reasonably wealthy club. Mullers would go and spend $100,000 on a player quite regularly. Other teams in that league couldn't do that. And of course, we then found that when we went to the top league, everybody could. Nowadays, I would think it's a little bit harder with the money that's awash. Don't forget, it's a bit like ourselves. We're actually playing in the Premiership this season. If we stay in there, we're a Premiership club. There's a difference. We found that in the Championship. We played in the Championship for a season, then we come out of it. Then we went back and stayed in it. We were a Championship club. And that's what they've got to do.
Mm. I've got the list here. So, I mean, I reckon you've worked with 15 of them. Could you...
But you're not going to name the entire squad, are you?
No, but you left when Russell was here, weren't you?
I left when Russell was here.
So that's Jimmy Media, Chris Catley, Alan Mullery, Barry Lloyd, Liam Brady, Jimmy Kay, Steve Gritt, Brian Horton, Jeff Wood, Mickey Adams twice, Peter J. Taylor, it says here, Martin Hinchwood, Steve Coppell, Mark McGee, Dean Wilkins, and Russell Slade.
Can I say you've missed out one there?
He has missed out one.
Oh, Bob.
Yeah.
Only for a couple of games.
That's good enough.
Yeah.
So it's 20 you've worked under, not 19.
Did you mention Mike Bodie? Was Mike Bodie in there?
That was we're in the top flight then. So yeah. But I mean, one of the names I did mention there was Liam Brady. Now there was a fantastic piece
on RTE's news website.
Interview with Liam. Now he still lives locally, doesn't he?
I think so. Yeah.
And he's a really lovely piece about the club, and his piece in the footnotes of the Albion history is massive, isn't it?
Without a doubt. I must admit, when he came to the club, what a fantastic name to have coming in. All his expertise of playing abroad, playing at the highest level. It was a massive boost for everyone at the club. But didn't really realise what such a big name and person he was until we went to Ireland. And we got onto a flight, and there was a lot of Irish people on the flight, and they got up and just touched him. Physically touched him as if it was the Pope. I've never seen anything like it with a footballer. Very well respected.
Well, at least they didn't treat him like the Blarney Stone and try and kiss him all.
That's correct.
Okay, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and our podcast. We're brought to you in association with oldfootballshirts.com. We have got a shirt of the week. We're just waiting to see if Phil Shelley is actually going to turn up or not. But in the meantime, here is a fantastic local band. This is Royal Blood.
Nothing here to see, just a kill I bleed, trying to cut some teeth, trying to figure it out. Nothing better to do when I'm stuck on you, I'm still, I'm here trying to figure it out. Getting hard to sleep, blood is in my dreams, love is killing me, trying to figure it out.
That was the sound of Royal Blood and Bob Booker enjoying a sausage roll. We're now joined by Joe Hunter from Piglet's Pantry. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning.
Thank you for bringing breakfast for us all.
It's okay, you're very welcome.
What have you bought for us today?
So I have bought you one of our legendary 18-inch sausage rolls. That's half a yard of sausage roll I brought you in this morning with red onion chutney.
Oh, have you taken a picture of one of these and we'll post it up? Because it is quite the thing.
I don't actually have wide angle on my phone.
I'm not eating the whole...
You have, because you've taken a selfie.
Very good, yeah. It's like a chimp's tea party in here. You've got Malcolm and Bob are actually scrumming themselves silly, like they've never been fed before.
Bob is actually wearing it, something.
Yeah. So while these two are still happily chomping, what's in the sausage roll that's pleased these two so much?
So, our sausage roll is just telling, pretty much, yeah, it's just wrapped in pastry. I was just telling the boys here that we buy our meat from still the same butchers over in Bexhill. He prepares that for us. So it's prime pork with some lovely pork fat going through it. 75% meat content, the highest as I've found in the industry so far, with the average being about 8 to 12%, which is not great. So we have seasoning, Cumberland seasoning, some garlic, and it's simply wrapped in pastry and served.
You look so happy with that. I mean,
it's absolutely gorgeous. You can tell the meat content straight away. You carry on, because I've got to finish it.
I'll tell you what, the pies are legendary. Try the sausage rolls, people.
I would actually say this. I mean, as gorgeous as the pies are, and you're quite right, they are legendary, the sausage rolls are on a different level again. Sorry, I mean, I know, you know. And what's more, and this is where I'm going to start sort of complaining, is you can't get these in the West End Upper.
Yes, no. We are working on a new project this year. So we've actually taken on North Stand 4 as you come into North Stand Turnstiles. That'll actually now be all branded Piglet's Pantry. Mm-hmm. I'll be there all morning to take questions from people if they want to come by, stop by and say hello.
Like, can I have another one?
Pretty much. Yeah. There'll be sausage rolls there all day. They're still in Dick's Bar. And if that project's successful, then hopefully we can extend that, obviously, to other areas of the ground. I will put a request in for you, fantastic. See what I can do.
Now, just before we came on air, you showed me a little piece of card, didn't you? Your season ticket from 2011.
I did, yes, I've got it with me. So,
okay. Well, it's no good for.
Exciting.
I'm afraid it's no good for radio.
No, we'll take a photograph of it afterwards.
Absolutely.
That's fine, we'll do that.
But you're going to frame it, because you say that's the start of your story, isn't it?
Indeed,
do
yes.
tell.
So, Luke, who was my youngest son, it was his 18th birthday when we first went up to the ground and put our hard hats on, and he needed a mum with a credit card, basically, is how the story goes. So I just set up the business 2 weeks before, and so he dragged me up there to look at all the seats and basically put it on my credit card, because that's how it goes. And the season ticket that's just been released, he's just got his newest renewal.
Yeah, I think we all
renewal.
Have,
I think you all have, haven't you? Along with your lovely car stickers and stuff. So he actually has been able to relinquish it to me and said, please frame it, Mum. That's how it all started. So I thought I'd bring it down to show you today.
And what was the story? Because it's at the time that you actually went to buy the season tickets, wasn't it?
Yeah, he needed... so there's quite a few of them that have been going since they were, like, 5 years old. And so there's a group of them in North Stand, and they're staunch fans. They went to Gillingham. Luke used to arrange travel around the UK for £1 to away games when he was a young boy at 16. So he's a massive fan. And so we had to get his seats together. So we went up, and Richard Hebbard was there at the time. I don't know if you remember Richard.
Ground safety officer.
Yeah, so he was there, and he was chatting about the stadium, how it was going to look, and you know, it literally was concrete still back then, and they were still building it as such. So I said very much. So it's a community stadium. What does that mean? Will you be buying local ingredients? How will it work? You know, how do you see the food going? Being a foodie, obviously, and being a Brightonian.
I think you're in a studio full of foodies.
Yes, yeah. So obviously, you know, all Brighton people are foodies, to be honest. So I was just asking the question, and he said, literally, this was the words that came out of his mouth, you don't make a good pie, do you? That was literally how it started. And I was just a bit like, surely you've got your pies sorted, or, you know, your food sorted. And
how long was this before the stadium opened?
When did we get those season tickets? It was probably... I started in April, so it's the end of April,
right?
Because it was literally 2 weeks. I remember it's like 2 weeks after we'd opened the bakery in Shoreham. So we opened that on the 2nd of April. So it must have been towards the end of April.
That's a great story, because it's nice to meet you in person. Because I actually do a tour of the dress rooms before the game to the club sponsors, and I tell that story.
Yeah.
So you're quite famous in the tunnel area.
Thank you.
A few hours before the game. It is a great story. It's all about being in the right place at the right time.
It is,
as footballers know as well. Look at Mel, you know.
But actually,
it's a great story.
Yeah, a testament to the club, because I think at one point when they were with Dean and they were planning all of this, we were feeding pretty much, I've met Martin Perry, his dog, the whole entire...
The whole entire people there
that they were kind of planning all their plans for there, and we were literally kept drafting in these samples, and I think they were just like, yeah, we need some more samples, Joe. So literally, I think there was about a 3 month period where I was constantly dropping samples of pies up to with.
I think Derek Chapman tried most of them, didn't he?
Derek Chapman was very instrumental in the actual choice of what went in the fillings. But I think that the edge was, and very much like most local companies, we can make a turn very quickly. So this morning I made you a roasted vegetable quiche.
Yes, you did.
With two cheeses in
which
it.
Dave and Kieran, who were on earlier, and I think might be on again later, and I can see Brian Owen outside, they're all actually devouring at the moment, so we'll get a
that's not actually on the menu. That was something I just threw together this morning
just for us,
just for you. So being a small company,
isn't she lovely?
Being a small company, we can make those turns quickly. If you want red onion in your sausage rolls, they're handmade, we'll put red onion in your sausage rolls. So I think, unlike big suppliers and big companies, big commercial companies out there, we do three products, that's it, that's all you get.
So you basically started, at the time you started, you had just opened a small shop in Shoreham, and that was your entire setup.
We sold 100 products a week.
And when the stadium opened, it went to...
We were hoping to make 1,500 to 2,000 products.
And what did the club eventually ask for?
10,000.
Ouch! And this is all in one little kitchen?
No, we knew when we started with Brighton, they've always been amazingly supportive. We were the first people to cook at Brighton, making the pies,
right,
because we didn't have the facilities. So we set up with all intentions of making all of these pies at Brighton Hove Albion. And we started off with that, and that's how we did the first few games. We actually did that until there were pies literally in every... You opened any kitchen, anywhere in the stadium.
Falling out the cupboard.
They were literally like that.
It's like Keystone Cops of kitchenware. Crash, bang.
And at the time, Elliot was like, Joe, we need to find a bigger for
gonna,
your pie.
We're going to need a bigger kitchen.
So we had to move back off-site again because it was just, it was impractical, really. So,
so are you, because I know that you've moved to bigger premises now. Mm. Is that big enough with your expansion and your intention on global domination?
No, it will be big enough. Okay. I don't think I can cope with yet another move. We've got 10,000 square foot now. It's purpose built. We've got brand new ovens coming again to sort of make sure that we've got enough room to kind of grow. And yeah, comfortably enough room. I don't think we will be moving again anytime soon. So yeah.
Sure. So, and how far and wide are Piglet's Pantry pies and goodies sampled these days?
So we've got lots of new stadiums now. So when you're going to your away games, which I suppose we should tell you about now, you'll be able to eat our products at Chelsea. Mm-hmm. You'll be able to eat
these are on sale retail.
Retail now, yes. Okay. Yeah, so we have our own units as well. So we have like little concessions, which are carts or Piglet's Pantry branded. So you'll see them up there, and we're on most of these sites. So we're across the UK now. So we're at the test match at the Oval during the summer, up at Edgbaston. Oh. We go far and wide up to Leicester. You can get them at Leicester, and you can get a red Leicester sausage roll at Leicester in every retail outlet this season.
You look on Malcolm's face there.
I'm going to go with this 10,000 square foot unit.
You'd be more than welcome, Malcolm. Do come along.
I always think, I'm just thinking in terms of there was a bit, if you remember back to Cheers, and there was a bit where Big Norm went on a tour of a brewery. And he put his hand up against the vat of beer and he started crying. That's you if you ever made a trip. Could you invite Malcolm over to
yeah,
Piglet's?
He'd never leave. It'd be lovely to see
Chief Taster.
Him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, good on you, Joe. Anyway, good on you.
Thank
well done.
You.
Well done.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Aidy, I believe we have some more music.
Kissing up boys.
That was My Federation, another Brighton band, and that was a song you may be familiar with. It was actually on the FIFA 2004 game, I think it was. Unfortunately, no longer around, but they were a tremendous band, and you can still go and buy that. But I'm now joined by David Mooney, who is the presenter of the Blue Moon podcast. That's the Manchester City podcast. Good morning, David. How are you?
Good morning. A bit sleepy, but all's well.
Well, this is well. I didn't sleep at all last night. It's got nothing to do with excitement, obviously. But, I mean, obviously, this is this is a big day for us down here. But how's the game being viewed in Manchester?
It's an interesting one because, I mean, first off, it doesn't take any kind of deep thinking to realise why it's a big game for Brighton and on their return to the top flight. I actually think it's a really big game for City as well because there's a lot of excitement around how City have played this pre-season. It really feels like Guardiola's made no compromises in how he's approached the summer. He got rid of all four fullbacks over the course of the summer, brought in brand new fullbacks in to kind of support how he wants to play. He's tried a new formation, a new system that seems to be working quite well. And we've finally seen this, you know, this high press that we were expecting last season didn't really come out. There were two games in particular in pre-season. They played Spurs in Nashville and Real Madrid in Los Angeles, I think it was. And both of those games, the other team just could not get out of the half because of the way City were pressing. And it was what we all expected City to be doing last season, and it didn't happen. So if it happens this season, it could be really entertaining to watch. And on top of that, it kind of this is an opening game of the season really feels like a true Premier League banana skin because City are a little bit untried and untested. And, you know, Brighton, one, they've got nothing to lose. And two, they're still riding the high of having been promoted last season. So if they do go on to struggle this season, they're at the point in the campaign where they're likely to take their notable scalps. And who better to take a notable scalp on the opening day than the one everybody's tipping for the title? It just seems written in the stars, yeah. Doesn't it?
I mean, we've turned the Amex into a bit of a fortress over the last couple of years, and teams have found it very, very difficult to come down here. There will be I suppose a party atmosphere today. It's our first game in the top flight for 34 years. You spent $200 million on upgrading your defence. So just to put that into perspective for us, that's how much it costs us to build the stadium and our new training ground.
Yeah, I think I'm in a no-win situation here because, I mean, of course I would say this. But there's a lot of focus been on how much City have spent on the defence recently, and I think a lot of it comes from there's two kind of aspects to this. The first one is that they've spent very badly on the defence in the last few years. They've brought in a lot of players that haven't been the quality that they've needed, and have looked at times a liability for a lot of money. So that's one headline out of the way. And then the second thing is, like, it's been the fullbacks this season that they've really gone after, and because it's largely because the last investment into the fullbacks was for Maicon, who was absolutely atrocious in 2012. So they haven't actually, you know, invested in the position for quite some time. And I kind of agree that it's bad planning to have got to that stage where you have to spend, you know, 160 million was it on getting new fullbacks in. But it's kind of the world that we're living in at the moment, and I find it really difficult. I appreciate my own bias on this one, and I would again say this, but I find it really difficult to get worked up by transfer fees these days because City will pay it, and they'll pay whatever it takes to get the player they want, I think.
Well, to be honest, when I was speaking to you in the week, and we were talking about where you've come from and where you are now, and the fact that you missed the days of Sean Gota.
Yeah, kind of. It's a funny one because they were, as much as City were bad, it was kind of like you had to make your own fun sometimes.
Well, other City fans I've spoken to said it was more fun back then than it is now.
Yeah, it can be. I mean, there's a lot of pressure these days that wasn't there in the old days, and I think that's what kind of makes it difficult for people. There's people in the Etihad who will start to get frustrated that City haven't scored within the first 15, 20 minutes or so, and you can kind of understand how that thought process gets to be in at the forefront of your mind, because, you know, you look at a team that's had so much money invested in it, it's expected to win the league, it's expected to, you know, you go to the Etihad expecting to see so much great football. And when the opposition come along and, you know, defend deep or defend really stoutly, and it's very easy to slip into the mindset of, oh, we're not performing very well, rather than, oh, the other team are doing a very good job of stopping us from performing. And when you think back to the old days in Division 2, I mean, it wasn't, let's be honest, the atmosphere at times was poisonous. There was some horrid kind of feeling around there because of where the club were.
Yeah.
But there wasn't that burden of expectation at the time. And it's kind of that little feeling that I miss. I would not swap being, you know, Premier League title challengers for the world. But it's just, I have this kind of strange reminiscence with the 90s. And I suppose it's because I grew up watching them in the 90s that I start kind of see it as a little bit of halcyon days, even though at times it was absolutely awful.
Okay, and just quickly, is Guardiola under pressure to win the league this season?
Yes and no. I don't think so from inside the club. I think they spent so long getting him in. They prepared. They were kind of putting the groundwork in place for him to come in when Mancini was still there. So they spent about 4 years trying to get him into place. So I think if he didn't win anything this season and they sacked him, it would be a really kind of it would be a waste of the last 5-6 years or so. But I think from the press, he will face all sorts of pressures just because he's touted as the best coach in the world, and he'll have gone two seasons without doing anything. So I suspect there'll be pressure on him, but I don't think the club would act on it. I think it would be a bit rash if they did.
And finally, a prediction for today.
Oh, I honestly don't know. On the podcast, I went for... I actually went for 3-0 just because somebody took my 3-1 scoreline that I wanted. but I'm not that confident in it, to be honest. It reminds me of a game City played a couple of years ago. They played Cardiff as their second game of the season. It was their first home game after being promoted. And it was a riotous atmosphere. Cardiff were really up for it. City were... They looked a little bit complacent, and Cardiff took them to the cleaners and won 3-2. And so I wouldn't put it past happening again today. But if City played to their ability, then they should win.
Fantastic. Well, we're going to have to leave it there.
I don't know.
So David Mooney, thank you very much. And obviously, bad luck for today. Obviously, we're going to draw 2-2 today. And I'm feeling very... I'm not
you
very confident at all.
Can't win on penalties this time.
I know. Well, I lie like a cheap plastic watch. But I will. But thanks for that. And we'll speak to you soon. Cheers. Bye bye. That was David Mooney from the Blue Moon Pod in Manchester. And, well, he had some interesting things to say about that. And obviously, I mean, we all miss the days of Sean Goater, don't we, Bob?
Feed the goat, as they say, didn't they?
Yeah.
Feed the goat. I played against the great man. So, yeah, difficult opponent. But, yeah, they've moved on since then. So, yeah, interesting times.
OK, well, we've now got another guest in the studio. So who is here today? Well, we've got Bob Booker still here, Malcolm Stewart's still here, Joe Hunter's still here, and so is Brian Owen. Good morning, Brian.
Morning, lady. Thanks for helping me get the most out of this momentous day.
Well, by getting you out of bed
early. When I'll still be asleep, yeah. Enjoy the early hours of it. So, yeah, nice to see you and everybody in this
not quite
nice, cosy studio.
Not quite the most. You missed out on the sausage roll.
Yeah, I saw a little.
I missed out on the sausage roll here. I'm there are genuine tears here. But Brian, it's been a really, really busy time for you. I mean, have you noticed that the whole landscape has completely changed for you?
I sort of struck me yesterday driving a reporter from the French equivalent of Sky Sports to the Amex to talk to Kerry Mayo in front of his engraving on the glass of Dick's Bar. That was a sort of Premier League moment, I suppose. Show it going around the Amex with four Spanish journalists last Saturday was another, and it's just a trip into the unknown, isn't it? It's going to be totally different. I know they've totally done our part of the Amex where we work, so not quite sure what to expect, but sort of looking forward to it in the way you get to the top of a roller coaster.
But, I mean, there's been a lot of worldwide interest in us. How has it affected you in your ability to get exclusives now that there's everyone wants a piece of the pie?
I think we...
See what I did there, Joe?
To be honest, my colleague Andy's more on the transfers exclusives in that way. So, I mean, in terms of speaking to people, I suppose it's a bit harder. We had Bruno a few weeks ago and we all sat around the table, and obviously I knew a little bit more background to ask him about. And then people fed off those storylines when I was sort of hoping they might go for the fact that he's mates with Leo Rajoa and they're playing Leicester quite soon. So there's that respect. But I don't know if everybody reads everything. So it's an interesting time. It's exciting. It's quite an exciting time, but busy. You can see that on people's faces a little bit.
Now, as well as being working for Yargos, you do other things in Spain. So what's the reaction to us in Spain at the moment?
I can tell you that the reaction of those four gentlemen from the Spanish press who I showed around the Amex was absolute surprise, blown away by it, to be honest. There was two from Mundo Deportivo, which is one of the national papers, sports only. Two from Diario AS, which is another one. And they were, obviously, they liked the stands, and they liked the pitch, and they liked all that. But I think it was the hospitality areas. They're moving to a new stadium. They're going from an old cavernous concrete bowl to a modern stadium with all the lounges and what have you. And I think they were interested in that. They were picking up brochures and looking at the little different rooms. And they loved the museum as well. They loved that sort of the tradition with the modern side of it.
And getting the most out of the stadium, which is something which we've done. I mean, there have been quite a lot of changes to the stadium over the summer with, like you said, there's new press areas. They've got a new press box right at the top of the West Upper, which is... That's a long way up. I've been up there. It's not somewhere you want to go if you've got vertigo.
No, I can see the track. We'll still be down over the top of the tunnel, but I think one of my colleagues will be up there today. And I can see the attraction of actually watching from that angle. Obviously, the best angle to watch from is where the TV gantry and where Tony Bloom watched from. But inside, it's done out quite similar to how they did the Rugby World Cup, because when that came, you know, the press lounge there, probably not so many listeners do, but it's almost like a lounge, like a leisure sort of area, and they ripped all that out and just put in rows and rows of tables, and it became much more of a working area, and they did that almost overnight. It was just unrecognisable. And they've done something similar, looking more permanent, obviously. So they've made a lot of changes. They've knocked walls down and extended corridors. And
they've had to put in secret entrances and stuff, haven't they? It's a bit like that something out of Harry Potter around there in the 1901 suites at the moment, because, you know, Abramovich couldn't possibly mix with the people.
Oh, okay. Well, it's different. That's what I mean. It's going to be different because it's going to be a different setup afterwards, and who we can talk to. And you know, if Glenn Murray scores the winner, is he going to speak to five different TV channels and radio stations before we can get him, etc.? So it's just interesting today to see how it works out. And hopefully, Glenn Murray will score.
Okay. Well, we have been very active so far in the transfer window, and there's not probably possibly more to come. But have you been surprised by the amount of money that we've spent so far?
Not really, because of it's just, you just can't compare it to anything that's gone. It's just so different. I mean, I was glad they've kept a lot of players and they've added. I noticed, you know, there was a time when there was, oh, Brighton aren't signing anybody, but look, Huddersfield have signed Aaron Moy or whatever, and they've basically kept him. No, I'm not, because it's just, sometimes you try and stop and get your head around the money that we're talking about. It's almost, you're almost best not. It's just almost like make-believe numbers, so... Not particularly.
But, I mean, Bob, I mean, we've spent £10 million on Davy Proper. Proper? Is it Proper?
I guess it's Proper, yeah.
Yeah. But it's, I mean, what have you made of him? Do you know much about him? He's a Dutch international for a start.
Well, he's got great credentials. It's about what he goes out and produces today, if he starts today, and for the rest of the season. £10 million, like Brian said, it is just a figure. That figure comes on his head now, so he has got to go and produce. You know, everyone will... Their expectations will be looking for a £10 million player, whatever that is, I don't know. You know, he might be worth £2 million, ability-wise, but he's now got to go and produce with that tag on the top of his head.
Well, we've signed him from PSV, and we're hoping he's going to have a bit more success than the last signing we had from PSV, which is, of course, Elvis Manu. In fact, our record with Dutch players since Michel Kuipers hasn't been that great, has it, Brian?
The Dutch Marine.
No pressure, Brian.
No. To be honest, the one that surprised me slightly, changing the subject, is when they signed the winger, Izquierdo. And there's a lot.
Can you just say that again for me?
No, I did it wrong actually, because it's like Izquierdo, because it's a Latin American thing, so you pronounce the Z. Yeah. But it literally means left. That's all it means. It's in the left side of something.
The Leche is right.
Yeah.
So he's like John Left.
Yeah.
Is what his name is. So, right, okay. I can pronounce that.
And that was sort of felt like left field in a way. Coming as I don't think we were expecting a winger. I think we were expecting a forward and a goalkeeper.
I was looking at him and I'm thinking he's been signed very much in the way that Sam Baldock's been used occasionally from the left cutting in.
The Bruges reporter I spoke to said he used to do that all the time, and that was his problem. He was good at doing that, coming inside, but he did it every time he got the ball. And it sounded, there's a lot of frivolous stuff with him, like the party stages in his hometown, and his DJing and wearing shades when he scores a goal and all that. But
you should write an article about that, Brian.
Don't worry, I have.
I know, I read it yesterday. He
hasn't gone online yet, so look out for that.
After the
but. But I think a lot of what he said about him just sounded Houghton-esque, the way that he's knuckled down, he's doing what he's supposed to do, and he does his work, and he's bulked up, and he's physically strong.
I must admit, my daughter's a massive fan, and she's got contacts in Belgium, and they have said that we've got a player that's probably slightly better than Knockhart at the time we signed him. They rate him very highly over there, so to have him, you know, and Knockhart on the same side, I think that's going to cause problems for everybody, isn't it?
Okay, now, so. Actually, there was one question I had to ask you about a player that we very nearly did sign from Belgium, which was, I can't remember the guy's name. What was the guy's name again? Renato. We were about to pay £8 million to Ghent for him. He failed a medical. So what I want to ask you is, how difficult is it to fail a medical?
It's much easier nowadays to fail a medical. I will say that in the time at the club, I failed probably four players, three of which the manager said, I don't care, they're going to play. And they signed them. The thing is that if you do that, you get no insurance on the player, so you're taking a risk.
Right.
At £8 million, you can't afford to take risk. I believe the lad's gone ahead and had a knee operation. Hopefully that'll be the end of his problems, but it's really the relationship of what that problem was. Now, if there was wear and tear to the joint and you're paying £8 million, I think you would still be very wary of that. A simple meniscus operation, yeah, you know, you turn around and say, let's get it repaired and we look at him again. But in Air Day, it was very touch and go because you didn't have MRIs. You couldn't X-ray players because you can only X-ray if you fear injury. So you were relating often to players' history. And certainly one player who, when we asked him if he'd ever had any operations, he replied no. And he had a 7-inch scar down the leg where he'd had his cruciate replaced. You can tend to look at that and think, well, I don't think he's being honest with us, is he really?
No.
Can
you name names?
No, I wouldn't say it was Mickey Bennett at all. But no, to be fair to him, he did say that it was a long time ago and he'd forgotten about it. Of course he had.
Yeah, you always forget about a cruciate ligament injury. Brian, I mean, most of the mainstream media are tipping us to struggle and to go down this year. What is your personal thought?
Gosh, I knew you'd ask me this. I've been thinking about it. I don't know if many people actually tip in Brighton to go down some. The BBC said they come bottom, said a lot of nice things about Brighton, and then said 20th. I suppose you've got to be a good team to finish 20th in the Premier League.
To be honest, the broadsheets have been largely very kind to us and think and I've actually looked at the players we signed, but the red tops are just looking at not doing much work on it at all, really.
I can remember talking to Bruno after the Aston Villa game. He's the only one who stopped, and he looked absolutely devastated. And I said, you look devastated now because you've come second, and this time next year you'll be celebrating because you've come 17th. And I wonder if that might actually be how it turns out. I wonder if the way things go with Brighton, it wouldn't surprise me if we come towards the end of the season with something still to be secured. I mean, you're talking about signings as well. One of the things which is different this year, when you look back, like with Bob's day, when Brighton were in the fourth tier and Mickey Adams, they brought in players who'd done well in the fourth tier. In the third tier, Gus brought in Gordon Greer to lead the team, who'd led Swindon to the playoffs. Then you look at the second tier, we'd bring in people like Murray, Knockhart, Rossini, a bit before that, Stockdale, who'd done well. So this is, I suppose, the challenge now is you can't really sign players who've won the Premier League.
I asked Bob this question earlier about David Stockdale. Were you surprised to see him go?
Yeah, I sort of one of those that could have gone either way, because you got the impression that they would have been happy to keep him, but they weren't desperate to keep him. So, and there was so much talk about it, wasn't there? So many little indications and people reading into it. I can remember a few years ago with Kuszczak that there were people saying, got to get Kuszczak down on a new deal. And all the time they'd spotted somebody who they would prefer. So it wasn't.
And you think Matthew Ryan was, he was told that we'd offer you a new contract, that you're not going to be number one, maybe?
Possibly, yeah, possibly. Or it could have come down to how Brighton valued Stockdale and how Stockdale valued Stockdale. So,
I do know that he's on a very, very good contract.
I don't think I'm alone in saying I wasn't necessarily totally surprised he'd gone, but I was surprised at where he'd gone.
I was. I mean, he had the opportunity to play in the Premier League, and in the World Cup year when he was going into last season. He was on form. Obviously, there was that one wicket at the end of the Aston Villa game, and it's a shame that that was his last appearance in the Brighton shirt, and that was the last thing, his very last action, which doesn't really sum up his career with us. But I thought that he would have certainly, if he's going to go anywhere, it would be to another Premier League club. But anyway, let's have a little break for some music, and this is what we want all journalists to do, which is show a little respect.
Try to discover a little something to make me sweeter. Oh, baby, refrain from breaking my heart. I'm so in love with you. I'll be forever love. That you give me no reason. You know you're making me work so hard. That you give me love.
That was Wheatus and a little bit of respect. And you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. Right, who am I joined with here? I'm joined by Bob Booker, Malcolm Stewart, Brian Hello. Owen, Dave Ryder's back in the room again, Alan Wares, Joe Hunter's sitting over there looking very comfortable, and Kieran Maguire is sitting on my shoulder like a parrot. We have brought you in association with oldfootballshirts.com, and we do have a shirt of the week for you, and I'm just going to... Who wants it first?
I'll take it.
This is an absolute beauty, by the way.
Oh... Okay, what I'm looking at here, and I've been asked by Phil to describe these properly, is the Phoenix Brewery shirt, away shirt from the mid-80s. I can't describe it than that. It's white with these lovely blue and red pinstripes. I'm going to guess 83-84, which is the season after we got to the cup final. How am I doing?
You're doing all right.
Okay. Do you want me to carry on reading without guessing what Phil's written?
You can do, but there, no, it's...
Okay, and please don't do it in the voice of Phil, because I don't think we've got enough bass in there.
But, yeah, no, it is the white away shirt. Phoenix Brewery is written in red. It's very, very rare. Phil does actually own this shirt, and it is one of his all-time faves.
I think it's an absolute... I'm going to pass the picture around. Well, as away shirts go, it's an absolute beauty.
Well, I'm going to read what Uncle Phil's got to say. He says, "Here you go, then. This week's shirts of the week. A new season for the Albion, and I'm signing in with probably my most prized Albion football shirt. I'll allow you to bask in the glory of it for a little bit." We've done that, Phil. "A little while back, I was contacted by an ex-player who asked me if I was interested in the 1984-85 Brighton match shirt that he'd worn. I was quite enthusiastic, as the 84-85 season, sorry, 85 shirt is the only one I don't have in my collection. I was even more gobsmacked when he told me it was the away shirt. Well, that's rarer than a rare thing, and it was never sold as a fan's replica, and I'd never seen one before, and here it is. Sure, it's probably an Adidas template shirt at the time, but with bags more character than what we get nowadays. The clues to it being a player shirt, apart from the fact that it was never made as a replica, are the embroidered seagulls badge and the Adidas trefoil logo. The sponsor's logo is reassuringly ironed on, or heat pressed if you prefer."
He does like to waffle, doesn't he?
He does. So to the 84-85 season, the Albion played in Division 2, sharing the league with clubs like Shrewsbury, Grimsby, Carlisle and Notts County. Oh, and Manchester City. We drew 0-0 with City in the home fixture that season, and we took 4 points from the caravan dwellers up the road.
Charming.
The Albion finished the season sixth, with Oxford United winning the league and securing promotion to Division 1. Thanks for that, Phil. He says, enjoy the match.
I think that was the season, it was under Chris Catlin, where I think we conceded the fewest ever goals that we have in a 42-match season. I think we conceded something like 34 goals. You could tell that we actually had a defender as a boss. And I think, actually, Chris Catlin, in the history... Maybe you could talk us about this, Malcolm. Chris Catlin, I think, is a kind of an underrated character in the history of the Albion, isn't he?
Yeah, very much so. I was actually involved in his last ever game. We played at Watford, reserve game. Both Cat and Martin Chivers finished their careers that night. We lost the game 7-0. Neither of them had ever been beat by such a score. And I can remember all the way back to Brighton, Chris Catlin sitting there shaking his head going, "Never again, never again." And he was right. He retired and then came back later as a coach and took over as manager. Mm. Lovely, lovely fella, Chris, but he won't mind me saying this, but very bad with names. Mm. And first game of the season, reserves were away to Arsenal, I believe, so we've turned up waiting for the coach. And Chris has come out of his office, and one of the youngsters walked past. He went, "Morning, boss." He went, "Morning." And he said to me, "Oh, God, what's his name? And I said, "It's Fleety, boss." He said, "Morning, Fleety." And I thought the funny thing was he didn't even know my name. Like. But nice fella. Done a good job. You know, all the things that you've got today, you have to look back at all these people that have really kept the place going in the past. Mm. And they'll all, I mean, I know that Chris Catlin are loved today. Muller's a love today. Mickey a love today.
They'd be very much in demand, won't they?
Well, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Bob now, Booker's in demand, isn't he?
Yeah, now, Bob, I mean, do you remember your last game as a player?
Yeah, I got carried off. I think it was Spurs away.
Is there anywhere where we can read about this?
In my book, probably. Thanks for that, Aidan. Yes. In the book, yeah, it's in the book. My last... It might have been a reserve game after that, but my main professional game was away to Spurs, I believe, in... playing for Brentford when my knee went again and I got stretched off down the tunnel, so that was time to say goodbye.
But your book, where can you purchase such a
well, it's out on Amazon at the moment, $12.99. You can also get it on your Kindle if you don't want to see any pictures, probably on the Kindle as well. Also, in City Books have done really well for us, so they are selling it down there in City Book Store, and obviously we're going to be pushing it at Your Evening with Booker McGee, so I thought I'd get all the plugs in while I can.
Absolutely, yeah. And where is this evening?
It's going to be at the Comedia down in Brighton on September 6th.
Fantastic, I'll be there.
Tickets are about a tenner, so it's all going to good charity, me.
it's going on a bottle of whiskey for Mark, I think.
Yeah, pint of whiskey.
It should be a good night. We're going to get back together for one night and tell a few football stories. Have I got time to say a couple of hellos?
Yeah, sure.
Quickly,
yeah.
Just a quick one. She's probably in the car still. My family on the way to Chessington today, and it's my niece Ruby's fourth birthday party today. birthday party birthday. She's going to Chessington Zoo. In fact, her dad, Ian Bolton, used to play for Watford. He's a bit of a wuss and he won't be going on any of the rides. But also Gordon and Sandra and Ollie Lashmar, very good friends of mine, are laying in bed as we speak with their Brighton pyjamas on, listening to the show. So they're very, very excited about today. So I hope they have a good day and I'll see them down at the ground later on.
Well, hello to you as well.
A dedication straight out of Southern FM, that was. Where did you get that idea from?
My good lady wife, Nikki, who's also laying in bed, and she's enjoying the show and said the man that's asking the questions is doing very, very well.
He is. He's the fella pushing the buttons is...
that's the one.
That's the one.
We didn't have a proper pre-season now. That's the problem. It. Now, Brian, you did pretty much all of pre-season, and what have you made of it, and can we read it much into it? I mean, obviously, last Saturday, apart from the end result... it was a decent performance.
Last Sunday, yeah.
I thought Sunday was better.
Yeah, Sunday. Last Saturday I went to Crawley. That's the only game I actually went to, and I was thinking that's the one. I don't know if Bob's more an expert than me. Is probably you can read a bit more into it if you look back. Final friendlies, there was a good one against Sevilla, there was a good one against Lazio, there was a late friendly against Chelsea, and they all sort of gave an indication that there was a promising season to come, whereas, say, the Southampton one didn't, and the Norwich one when they drew 1-1 sort of didn't, but that's the only game I've been to, and I've after the first half, the Yannick Carrasco show for 45 minutes, I think the second half is what people take away from that game, and the more aggression, not in a physical way, but the way they sort of set about Atletico, and Sonny March easing past Juanfran was pretty spectacular, really.
I think a lot of managers, really, I know Mickey in particular, absolutely hated pre-season, no matter who he was playing. And really, to be honest, I don't think it counts for anything, really. You can look at it a little bit, but it's all about today. Mm-hmm. And they just look at us getting players through games, getting minutes under their belt, getting a bit of match play, getting a bit of shape, and just sort of getting fit and getting ready for today.
What about that final friendly in front of a big crowd, in front of a good... Is that a little bit more of a guide when you put possibly your first 11 out?
I don't know, they were playing with Dean.
Yeah. I mean, like you say, the last one down at the Amex, you know, with a good crowd, and you know, people said I wasn't at particularly at the game. I was in Sheffield pushing my book, but we played particularly well, and we looked decent. So, you know, the manager will look at that a little bit and think, yep, I can take some little bits and pieces of that today. How did we do? How's the fitness? Who's ready for it? Who's not? And he'd be juggling it around over his head the next few days leading up to today's game.
Now, off the pitch, obviously there's an awful lot of international interest. You know, the media has just been, well, even with us, even our sort of lovely little show here in the sweaty cupboard here. I mean, there's a lot of people who are actually interested in talking to us and to the Albion with its story. And Brian, you know that certainly other countries have certainly had a lot of interest. So what have you been up to doing that?
Well, something we mentioned sort of a few minutes ago, the Spanish ones are the main ones I get to deal with. There's a little piece in there about Bruno facing his idol in one of the papers today, and just showing a few people around. The French reporters are here. There's going to be an Aussie contingent, we understand. I think the mix zone will be certain media fraternities looking to their compatriots to see what story they can get. And obviously they are playing a club who attract a lot of interest as well, so it's not so much we see the Brighton side of it. I don't know how much of it, say, if Brighton were kicking off against Stoke or West Brom or something. But it's just the whole thing. It's just come together. There are times just doing as much as possible. It's almost felt a little bit like when one of our clubs get in the FA Cup and play a big Premier League team. It's had that slight feel to it. Just do all you can and all this interest, which you've never really seen before. Apart from this is obviously, hopefully it's going to be reality, not to this level. But they're going to be playing at this level for years to come. So there will be games like this.
Right, let's change tack slightly. Let's go back to where we were all about an hour or so ago. Jo Hunter is here from Piglet's Pantry. She came with a huge tray of goodies. And, well, it's just been like a chimp's tea party in here and out in the open market. And I believe that Kieran is actually about to say something rather nice about
it. Can you set it to poetry?
Sadly not, but the...
Do they sell them at a small club like Crystal Palace? No.
Well, I would say that sausage roll was so good with the orange chutney or the if you do get the Palace contract, Joe, I will go and watch them just to eat your sausage roll.
Could you imagine me selling to Crystal Palace ever? Any of you?
It's all about money, Joe. Get down there, girl.
I think they wouldn't eat them, they'd just throw them at each other.
Okay, Dave, it's obviously the first time back in the top flight for 34 years, but have you got any memories of 34 years ago? Were you there?
No, sadly not. I'm a bit of a more recent a recent watcher of the Albion. I started about 87, 88, but I was thinking back just to the last 20 years, certainly, when we stayed up on the last day at Hereford, and I went with three friends of mine, and when we came away from that, there was just such a euphoric feeling. And we went back to a quote that came out in a film. If anyone's seen Planes, Trains and Automobiles, there's a bit where they nearly die in a car crash. And
oh, they say, that's not a pillow.
No, not that bit. No, not that one. That was later on that night. But no, the the bit I'm referring to... Kieran's gone. The bit I was referring to was when they come away... And they say, we can laugh about it now, we're all right. And that's exactly how we felt when we come away from that game. We laughed about it because we were all right. And that's my abiding memory of the last 20 years, really.
I think that's what Kieran's doing now, actually. I've never seen anyone corpse on the radio quite so badly.
But Kieran, you were at the Goldstone 34 years ago?
Yes, and sort of perfect circle. It was home to Manchester City that day, and Kevin Reeves scored one. I was in the north stand. I remember it looping over Graham Mosley's head. And it was just silence. I mean, the Manchester City fans were going mad because that was the match where they thought that they'd avoided relegation. They were actually relegated with us the following week when they lost at home to Luton with the famous pictures of David Pleat dancing across the pitch. And I remember staying for about an hour after the game, just completely crestfallen, thinking, well, we'll be back one day. I didn't realise I'd be 55 when it would be the case, but the day is so amazing. It's a testament to so many people who have come and gone since then.
I mean, it's just incredible. I mean, the club has kind of, well, it bottomed out. No giggling over there, but it did. It really did sort of crash and burn. And I think, yeah, Bob, you, I think it's probably appropriate that just as we start into the Premier League, that you actually want to mention a few people that.
Yeah, just Kieran touching there. You know, we're very privileged today that we're going down to this fantastic event today to see us in the Premier League. But as you quite rightly said, we lost a few people along the way. Friends that I knew, and Sarah Watts, Paul Welsh, Ed Basford, Roy Shooter. And probably many, many fans leading up to this day. And I remember the last game of last year, and when I do my commentary, a lovely lady sits behind me called Wendy, and she used to come down and bring me down a cup of tea at half-time and a few sweets, and we used to talk, and she liked to come to her games, her husband didn't. And she didn't make that last game because she sadly passed away. So she missed that last game when we got into the Premiership, and she's not going to be there today, and when I look behind, her seat will still be there. And that's going to be very touching. And it's people like that that really you want to just turn around and say, you know, they've done the gillenums, they've done the marching, they've done all the campaigning, and they really should have been at that game today.
Absolutely.
And they won't be. So it's a sad loss, but we'll all be there cheering them on together, no doubt,
well,
today.
Well, to the friends that we've lost along the way, I mean, and like I say, some have been very recent. We pay tribute to Ed Basford, and like I say, the names you've mentioned and so many before, but, you know, and as I understand it, there will be a minute's applause today on the 69th minute for Ed, which I... Funny enough...
He
hated it, but... no, I think that, I mean, I had a good natter with Roz yesterday, and she was of the opinion that this isn't just for Ed, because there's a lot of people that want to mark his passing and show appreciation and thanks for what he did for the club and for everyone associated with, you know, where we are today. So, yeah, I think it's they are funny things, because there's almost like a kind of a moratorium. There's almost a, you know... For the away team to score during that sort of minute's applause is almost bad form, and yet, you know, what can you do? I mean, if the home team score, that's one thing, but I'd like to think, even if that did happen, because let's face it, City could actually probably score at will if they felt like it, that we'd actually just carry on, because today is all about us. It's not about City. It's not even about the Premier League. I think that this is all about the achievement that we've actually, you know, we've got.
Okay, well, let's have a quick break for some music, and this is quite apt.
Carry me, carry me, carry me. to carry me. Together in this mad land, far from truest hands, well, I'll carry you. If you carry me, carry me, carry me, friend. Oh, carry me. We'll blow away the heat, but we'll do it in our minds. Yeah, if we can take the time, we'll build ourselves a road. From what we know, each taking our part. Ah, but now's the time to start. Yes, you know I must be. You know it must be. You know it must be. But Jane is taking heroin. Paul is getting pissed. Stephen's getting stoned. They're too fucked to fight.
That was The Levellers and Carry Me, of course. And we are coming into the last 10 minutes of this Albion Raw special here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB and on our podcast, and of course in association with the fantastic oldfootballshirts.com. And we thank Phil Shelley as ever for his support. Now, Joe, you've got something to say.
I have, yes. So, first of all, massive, you know, shout out to the catering team, to the people behind the scenes that have been working round the clock to make today happen, and there are a lot of them, but certainly Tony, Sonny, Andrew, big thanks to you all. They've worked really, really hard this week, and just from all of the Piglets team down there that are getting ready set up this morning, make sure you get those pies in quick, because there's going to be a lot of people coming shortly, and good luck to the team. Obviously I'll be there shouting loud and proud in the Heineken Lounge.
Is that, I mean, you've been doing this since the stadium opened, and as time's gone on, especially as we got closer and closer to the Premier League, we get more and more full houses, and we've got a full house today. Has anything really changed kind of this season or even the last season or so compared to how it once was?
That's a good question. The stadium was built to sell. You might remember back in the day, we got up to a heady heights of 10,000 pies, and we're still sort of around that number. So it was built to kind of produce that. And so the stadium is quite unusual in the fact all the kiosks have their own ovens and their own hot holds, and it's all purpose built. So we have a maximum number anyway. So it's business as usual, but business as usual for every game now. It's going to be maxed out every game, and I think that's the big difference, is that we need to make sure that we're ready, set up and geared up for it, and we'll be on site every game to make sure that happens.
So I think it was you, Malcolm, earlier saying that these are the kind of the pies that from which all others are judged, really, aren't they?
Without a doubt. I'm quite lucky to get about to different games with a role that I do for the FA, and these pies have been actually spoken about by different members, different clubs and different organisations that go there. So it's lovely to turn around and say, oh yeah, they're made near where I come from. And I tell you what a morning I've had. I've had Joe in here with her sausage rolls, a signed copy of Bob's book, and 80s record. Oh, I've had the morning of my life, I have. I really have.
That's because you're not going to the game, Malcolm.
Unfortunately, I'm not.
And just very quickly for those loyal fans out there, the guest pie is especially created for Brighton today. It's a chicken tikka masala with a nod to our City fans coming down. We haven't created this before. It's a specially created pie just for Brighton fans today. And the veg pie is a broccoli, cauliflower and two cheese. So there we go.
It's slightly different, Brian, from the press boxes that you go into, sort of in some grounds. I'm going to think in terms of, I'm going to mention this, Griffin Park, where you don't quite get a Piglets pie there, do you?
It sort of varies where you go. You do tend to get a pie anywhere north of probably Gatwick, actually. But it does tend to be a pie of certain sorts. Do you do Fulham as well?
No,
there's something similar at Fulham. They do quite
Maybe
nice as well.
Cottage,
yeah, but the Amex catering, the Amex catering for us is has sort of been Premier League anyway. So we'll see how it goes now this season.
Okay, we're getting to the last 5 minutes of the show. Let's go around the studio. What? I'll start with you, Bob. What are you expecting from today?
I'm really not sure which way it's going to go. In my heart, I'm saying that we're just going to produce and put on a performance for the fans that we deserve today. On my football head, we're playing against £200-300 million worth of talent. I wonder how many pies that can buy, 200 million. but so, you know, I'm really not sure. I've got to be honest, I don't know which way it's going to go. But my heart goes, I just want us to put on a good show for the fans and just let the Premier League know that we mean business and we're in it for the we're in it for the good.
I tell you what, I'm looking forward to today because I really do fancy we'll take something out of it. You have throughout your careers teams that you do well against and badly against. It doesn't matter at what stage. You know, we had Brentford, we could never get a result against. Man City, throughout the years, we've got results against them. The last time we played them at Withdean, I think we had a team worth about 7-6 in old money, and we knocked them out of the League Cup. So forget about all the 200,000. It's about 11 players out there today, or the subs included. I think we'll do our result for the Albion today.
Brian? A bit like Bob, really don't know. You have times when you think of the worst possible scenario. I think the Atletico game was a bit of a... could be a blueprint, especially the first half. So if they keep that sort of shape, discipline, maybe they could nick something. But I quite like to not know what's going to happen, to be honest.
Dave Ryder.
I think we've got a chance. I think it's the best time to play them. I know they've had some good pre-season results, but... I think we've done all right. We looked okay against Atletico, and I think it, as Brian's just said, if we keep our shape and discipline, I think you know, if we can keep it tight for the first half, and then we can have a real go at second half, just like we did on Sunday.
Go on, Joe.
Okay, predictions. I think it's going to be probably nicked at the last minute, like the Atletico game. But I'd like to think it'll be the same score. I think we want to win, and I think the team looking good last week. So I'm very excited to be going out to watch them today.
And Kieran. When we were in the old First Division, there was one team that we scored 4 goals against twice during that period, and that team was Manchester City. I'd settle for the same today.
So there we go.
Even if that means we concede 6, won't we? Aidy, what you as a fan? I mean, in respect to the day itself, we're finishing here at 10 o'clock. We got through till 5:30, so maybe there might be the odd beer taken. But what are you expecting from the whole day?
Not we're going to do a Facebook Live thing. That's going to be fun.
Have we? I mean, just for the for the whole day. What? How's it feel to you today?
You know what? I haven't really had much chance to think about it because I've been preparing for this all week. But
according to Malcolm, you haven't.
Oh, this is true. Like I said,
you've got
to prepare to sound this unprepared, I'll tell you. But it's, I mean, I've got a feeling we're going to nick a draw. In fact, actually, we have a, you may not believe this, but every year we have an Albion Royal AGM with myself, Al, and what we call our team, which is Andy Bass, Marcus Hancocks, Phil Shelley, Louise Shelley, and Vicky Lang wasn't available. But it was mooted to us that we do a predictions league this year, Al, doesn't it? So we have got to make predictions, which we've said we'd never do.
I hate doing that because, like I say, I mean, if one thing is that there's one thing predictable about the Albion is that we're unpredictable. I mean, we'll probably be that sort of sodding awkward team that will actually get results against the top teams and then completely screw up against the bottom teams. That's just those that have followed the club for sort of 40 plus years know that that's how we operate.
Okay, well, I'm going to go for it. I'm going 2-2.
I think that would be very un-Houghton to be the team who flops against the lower teams and does so well against the top teams.
It would be. Do you know, I fancy we'll score. I fancy we'll score, but then I seriously fear that so will City more than once.
Okay. Well, because, I mean, and everyone else...
I think Brian's already had a little bet on us to finish above Stoke. I can see
of course.
I'm not a betting man, but my colleague is, and I think he might have had that.
I think Brian will back us up, even in the time when I started here at 2000, like you just said. I don't think there's been one season where you haven't had something to write about, whether it's up the top or down the bottom. So let's hope there's something to to write about for you guys.
There'll be plenty to write
about. And with that, that is all we've actually got time for this week. So just a quick reminder, we might have mentioned it once or twice today, but myself and Al are delighted to be putting on Albion Raw Live, an evening with Bob Booker and Mark McGee on the 6th of September at the Comedia. Tickets are available for £10 from the Comedia box office. And that just leaves me to say thank you very much to, of course, Bob Booker.
Cheers, guys.
To Malcolm Stewart.
Thank you.
To Brian Owen. To Dave Ryder. To Joe Hunter. To Kieran McGuire. And, of course, Alan Wares. I've been Eddie Packham. We'll be back next week. And we'll have played a Premier League game by then. But we think this is apt to close with. This is Praise You.
Praise you like I should.